welcome. It's been a week here in Houston. Our Astros won the World Series. I'd be remiss if I did not mention that.
Yes, sir.
That was exciting. Very exciting, man. I stayed up watching footage and cheering, and I about blew the roof off the house when Jordan hit the home run, so it was a good start to the week after recording last Friday night and celebrating our baseball team and the city, enjoying the celebration, and it feels like it's been I don't want to say downhill since a week ago, but it feels like a lot has occurred this week.
Yeah. It feels like a busy week.
Yeah, but we've got something to get into here to start to show off. But this is the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
And welcome to the show, Matt. How are you?
Oh, doing good. I've got some coffee in me, so I'm good, man. Got the caffeine flowing.
You know, I drink caffeine. I don't drink coffee every day, but I drank coffee this morning, and it'd been a bit since I drink a warm coffee, because I usually I'm an iced coffee person. And man, it had me jittery this morning. I was all like, and I was like, but it was cool because I like coffee when it gets cooler outside. And I think it's safe to say today is our first officially cool morning we've had since probably like February. You know.
Oh yeah, low of 44 for Houston is pretty cold.
So it was kind of chilly in the air this morning. A cup of warm coffee sounded good before getting out the door for Saturday errands. The big, we're going to start to show a little bit of a bit different than we usually start it. We usually start with download this, but we got to talk about the great Kevin Conroy first, and he. Passed away on Thursday, November 10th, from a short battle with cancer, apparently. He didn't tell a lot of people he had it. Apparently, this was pretty recent news, and it took him very quickly. And for people that don't know, Kevin Conroy, of course, is the voice of Batman for almost 30 years now, as far as a lot of projects.
More than 30 years. 91 is when he started.
Well, yeah. Well, Batman the Animated Series premiered in 92. So, yeah, they probably started work on the project in 91, but I was just thinking from the show weird. He was the voice of Batman the Animated Series, numerous animated films and other projects, video games, various Batman voice work over the years. He even appeared as Bruce Wayne in a live-action version in one of the CW shows. Very famous voice, ideally one of the top three or four voice actors of all time, I would imagine, and a very definitive voice of Batman. I mean, for the last three decades, the new generations, I mean, Kevin Conroy has been the voice of Batman. And even for me, I mean, I'm in my mid 40s and I had Adam West when I was a kid, but I became much more familiar with Batman, especially in 89 with Michael Keaton's Batman. And then, in 92, Matt, man, I used to come home and, nowadays we have DVR, of course. And back then you had to set your VHS on a timer to record anything, you know.
Yeah.
And Batman the Animated Series came on like at 2:30, 3 o'clock. I wasn't quite home from school yet. So I would set the VHS every day to record Batman the Animated Series. And I would come home and I'd rewind it and I'd watch it. Yes, you used to have to rewind things, people.
Yep.
And that was, man.
Rewind.
That's right. And Batman the Animated Series made me probably an even bigger Batman fan than I already was. I sometimes think back and that was the show that defined Batman for me. And a lot of that was done through just absolutely fantastic storytelling on the show, unique art style, and the voice of Kevin Conroy as Batman, Mark Hamill as the Joker, a lot of other
Tara Strong
did, Harley Quinn all those years, a lot of famous voices on the show. And so Kevin, his voice, man, I read Batman comics in his voice, you know, that's just how familiar his voice has become as the voice of Batman. And, so some great performances through him, the show is an amazing show. One of my favorite episodes is Beware the Grey Ghost, which actually has Adam West as a guest star in it. So you had two Batmans starring in that show. And I spent yesterday watching a few episodes. It just how remarkable the show is still 30 years later. It's still the best incarnation of Batman probably ever done. It's possibly one of the greatest cartoons ever done. And so Kevin Conroy was 66 years old, and everything I've read about him is just, he was truly just seems like the most kind gentleman ever, from his co-stars, from Mark Hamill to different fans that have things to say about him. It's just like, he never, ever took it for granted. He would listen to every single fan that had a story to tell him, to talk to him about. He would take his time to make their visits personal when he did these cons and stuff. Cause, you know, you've been to cons, a lot of times it's not very personable. It's very move quick, get your autograph and move on. But Kevin was not like that. He made sure everyone had their moment with him, and just seemed like a truly gracious, kind gentleman from what I've been reading. And he's going to be missed, but he's left such a gift to the world with his body of work. Matt, what are your thoughts on Kevin Conroy?
Man, I, you know, you summed up most of it, but you know, you can thank his success with Batman, the animated series, and credit it to other animated series, you know, like Superman. I mean, as the Superman, Spider-Man. I don't think Spider-Man animated series would have happened if Batman wasn't as successful as it was. I think, you know, with Conroy and company, you're able to show that, you know, that could be successful, you know, adapting a comic book to an animated series and letting, you know, kids or, you know, young, you know, teens, really, you know, get these comics. Cause a lot of them were shot for shot. I mean, and you could get comics on screen and kind of get caught up with what was being released out there, you know, on illustration just by flipping on the TV. And Conroy facilitated that, and became the voice of Batman. Like you said, you know, you read anything Batman, Conroy is flashing through your mind when you're reading something. And you know, he's going to leave a huge void. I mean, he even got in an exo suit and, you know, tried to see how it was to be, the older Batman when he was doing Batman Beyond. You know, he was, you know, very, very much into that role. You know, like you said, he portrayed Batman and that woman on the CW. He even kind of sort of, you know, people played himself in Yoga Hosers. And most recently, of course, voiced Nordak or Yordak on He-Man Masters of the Universe. And man, it's, I know both of us were watching Conroy stuff. I watched some of his Justice League and movies, and you know, it's sad, man. You know, it's just out of the blue. You know, he didn't mention anything about his cancer, so you know, you weren't able to really brace for it. You know, you didn't have this, okay, you know, this, you know, pre-story to what he was going through. It just happened, you know, and you're just, you know, I think that's why everyone's in just big disbelief, you know, just, you know, how did this happen so quick? It's just sad. But you know, he's going to be missed, and you know, wow, what a day to be talking about the death of Superman and the death of Batman all in the same day. Cause he was a Batman, you know, he wasn't like a Bruce, you know, Greenwood where he just voiced once, you know, he did it for three decades plus.
Yeah. I mean, look back, I mean, Batman the Animated Series, Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, you know, Justice League Doom. Then he came out of retirement to do the Killing Joke. Not that he was retired, but he wasn't really doing Batman anymore. He had said that Arkham City was going to be his last Kevin Conroy, but then he came back and he did the Killing Joke, and he did Arkham Knight in the video game.
Harley Quinn. Batman Harley Quinn. Harley,
as a favor to Paul Dini, he came back to do that, which maybe he shouldn't have because it's probably one of the worst of the animated films. But, you know.
Hey, there is that one scene with Harley Quinn and Nightwing.
And then he, he got to do a more mature version of the Arkham video game, so a little bit more mature Batman. And so you just look at his body of work that he did, and you know, it's amazing. He set the standard. And guys like Jason O'Mara, who's been doing Batman most recently, they do a good job and stuff. But nothing comes to that standard that Kevin set with his voice of Batman. And like I said, you're looking at three decades now. It's generational how he's crossed over. My kids know who Kevin Conroy is, you know. At least Michael does. I don't know why it really necessarily knows, but Mikey, he knows who Kevin Conroy is. And so he leaves that void of, you know, just a remarkable. To me, he is Batman. I mean, people say, "Oh, who's the best Batman? Do you like Christian Bale or Ben Affleck or Robert Pattinson?" But honestly, it's Kevin Conroy. And yeah, he just did as a voice, but he gave so much of that role to make Batman so identifiable for generations.
Yeah, you ask anybody who your favorite Joker is, you get a lot of people that are going to say Mark Hamill. And, you know, this is the same kind of situation. There, you ask who's your favorite Batman, a lot of people and a half are going to say Kevin Conroy. And that he's who you think of when you say Batman, because he just represented that character and really brought it to life over the past years. You know, I know he hadn't done much recently, and over the past year, such a generic term, but, you know, just, you know, I know you grew up with more of it. You know, by the time I kind of got into the Batman animated series, it was two or three years post the original release.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but that's why it's such a generational thing, though, because you found it, our kids are finding it. And, you know, watching some episodes these last couple of days, the show holds up so remarkably well. It feels like it was just made. I mean, just great storytelling. And then
the writing, man.
That's all brought to life by phenomenal voice work by the cast that did the show. And it starts with Kevin, who conveys the emotions that Batman needs to be brought onto the small screen. And, you know, he did, of course, the Mask of the Phantasm movie, which we covered a couple of years ago, which is ideally one of the best of the Batman films. And he also did the other direct-to-video Sub-Zero and The Mystery of the Batwoman. So he did a few films too and numerous other projects. And just, you know, a remarkable talent, a remarkable actor, a remarkable person from all I've read, that he just was quite
an
extraordinary person to meet. And he never took it for granted. You hear the term celebrity, and people sometimes wonder, well, you know, why do you take the time to mourn a celebrity or somebody you never met? But some of these guys just transcend being a celebrity, you know, when it was Stan Lee or Bill Paxton, or, you know, we're going to talk a little bit here about Chadwick Boseman and, you know, imagine when Mark Hamill moves on, or Harrison Ford. There's just guys like that. And Kevin Conroy might've been more behind the scenes, but I think he's up there in that echelon as someone who's important to us in the shaping our culture and pop culture and what we've enjoyed. And I think he deserves that tribute to talk about him and the gift he's given us of his voice work of being the Batman for many generations to come.
Yeah. And that's well said.
He will be missed. And sometimes you got to start the show with some necessary somberness, and there's going to be a little bit of that today, but you know, we're not trying to, like, oh, you turn on the podcast, oh, it's all sad stuff. No, it's tribute, man. It's because we love these guys, and we truly enjoy the pop culture elements of what they brought to something we enjoy, whether it's Kevin Conroy or Chadwick Boseman, who we'll discuss here in just a minute. It's important to remember these guys and the work they've brought to us. So we move on from Kevin Conroy to download this, where we tell people what we watched and streamed and checked out this week. And I'll be quick, because I really didn't watch much other than Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, which we'll discuss in a minute. I did watch another episode of Andor, so I think I'm through six episodes. And the sixth episode was better. You know, they finally get to that base and infiltrate it. And I was like, okay, we're finally getting some Star Wars shit here. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. I'm going to keep watching it. It is Star Wars. I'll get through it eventually. Because, like I said, it's Star Wars. I'll watch it. That's really, I think that one episode of Andor is all I really sat down and watched this week. Other than Black Panther, which we can get to here in just a moment.
Wow. Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned earlier, I watched, you know, a couple of the Conroy Batman films animated. And then it was Veterans Day Friday. So of course, you know, you have to watch a couple war movies. So, me and the wife put on American Sniper and Saving Private Ryan, two great films. You know, went and, you know, paid my respects at the, you know, Houston Memorial Cemetery for my grandpa and my cousin's husband, who's a sniper for the embassy in Iraq. His grandfather served in World War II, and I put flowers on both their graves. And I know that's more of a Memorial Day thing, but you know, never a bad time to go and honor America's greatest generation, as you know, they're called, and for good reason. So hope everyone who knows a veteran, has veterans in their family, or is a veteran, like, you know, his name is, Ray.
Friend of the show.
Yeah.
Guest on the show, Rob.
Rob. Sorry, Rob. Got tongue-tied there.
3-hour show.
3-hour show, man. I love watching your videos going through Walmart and finding stuff. It's hilarious. As I, you know, someone made a decision here. You know, you see people putting back shit and grabbing beer instead, or vice versa. So I hope he had a good Veterans Day, and hope everyone got like a cool free meal, got respected, and maybe if you had to get through traffic, people let you cut through, you know, all that good stuff. But hope everyone, you know, just warm wishes for everyone out there and with that status. Other than that, I want to say that is all I watched before I went to the theater and saw Wakanda Forever. So for me, I guess I'll start off with it. Are we going to spoiler territory, or? Somewhat. We'll see where it goes. So I felt like, you know, like what you said, Mark, you posted it. It's a more emotional movie for sure. It's not the action robust movie as much as the first one is. There is action in it. Some cool action scenes, obviously tons at the end. But there is a lot of tribute to the great Chadwick, and, you know, just, you know, sad not seeing him in that role. But you know, they definitely spend a ton of the movie just, you know, honoring him and saluting him really, and sending him off in a bang. You know, we didn't get Dr. Doom in the movie, you know, which, you know, it seems like they wanted to just really kind of keep this thing within the Black Panther universe, within the Black Panther sequel, kind of like they did with the Iron Man movies. You know, whether that continues to go, we'll see. But I enjoyed it. I don't think I enjoyed it as much as the first one, but it is a good movie, and definitely looks great. Love the bridge scene. That's probably my favorite scene. You know what I'm talking about? The fight on the bridge, and one of the warriors is like, you're not worth my blade, and you just get a sense of how strong Namor and his people are in this film. They're badasses, so you get some strong adversaries in this film. I enjoyed it. Mark, your thoughts on it?
Well, I enjoyed it. It's a little long. I might have shortened it some. It's not a ton of action compared to the first one, but when there is action, it's good. I mean, the whole movie shot well. Ryan Coogler is an amazing director who's got a wonderful eye for cinematography and shooting film, and so all that's great. I probably choked up 3 or 4 times in the movie because it is quite a tribute to Chadwick at the beginning and towards the end, an incredible tribute to him. So that all that's great. I'm going to not be necessarily negative, but my biggest nitpicks with this movie is, when Chadwick passed, they had to figure out a way to move forward with the Black Panther legacy. And I think they did great as far as all that goes. I really do. My problem with this movie is like a lot of the Marvel films that suddenly introduce new characters like Namor and his people is like, where have they been the last 10 years? This guy who's, it's like I want to destroy the surface world because they pissed me off 300 years ago. And so I'm going to sit here for 300 years ago. And now I want to join Wakanda and I want to kill everyone. Like, what? What have you been doing for 300 years? You know, that's my biggest thing sometimes is the way they retcon some of this stuff. And I know that's being nitpicky, but I can't help but notice it. It's like, you're fighting fucking Thanos and all these other people. And Namor and his people are just chilling out in the ocean this whole time. It's like, okay. But that said, it was badass seeing Namor and his people. He was freaking awesome. I think it does introduce a new element to the MCU. You notice they allude hints as far as him telling Shuri that, or telling his, not Shuri, but his, our people will come for the surface world and they're going to call us for help.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously alluding to the possibilities of Dr. Doom and Kang and the people who are coming in the future in the MCU, now, anyone looking for this movie to jump the MCU's current phase any further? Not really. I mean, we're still waiting to see. Looks like we have to wait till Ant-Man for that, as far as Kang goes, and see who will jump you forward. But I think this movie has been right up there with No Way Home as far as one of the better entries in the current phase. That's for sure. Because Thor was kind of, and Doctor Strange was okay.
Yeah.
But this was definitely a really good film. With some good sequences and very emotional. Like I said, a well-shot film, good performances. And hats off to Coogler and his crew to pull this movie off without Chadwick Boseman and to make a movie that fits seamlessly to continue the story and pay proper tributes to Chadwick and his legacy as far as him bringing the Black Panther to the big screen for the first time a few years ago. And I'm with you. I like the first movie better. But I don't want to blame Coogler and them for that because I think they had a lot to fill.
They had to overcome some, a big gap.
Yeah, a big gap.
And then you have to use a storyline, that we're past, the events that would have normally made that happen continuity wise. And it felt a little rushed to me how they made her the Black Panther.
I felt the last 20 minutes felt a little rushed.
Yeah. And it just continues the notion that, like Chadwick, he had to almost die. He had to lose his power and then, almost die and go through the spiritual journey. And then have this epiphany of who he needed to be as the Black Panther. You had a whole movie of that. It was spread out through the entire movie.
I know.
And she's really sort of past like that, because even Civil War, he was having this internal battle with how to properly be the Black Panther. And Shuri just kind of became.
Yeah. She's like, I'm going to go get some revenge. I'm the Black Panther now.
Yeah. And it's, women just are, men have to become. And that's just. It's another, I started that with Long, and if Long was here, he would roll his eyes. But Long, which I talked to Long about the movie, he loved it, thought it was great. Very, very emotional movie is what he had to say about it. That's Long feels the same way we do. Obviously it had to be Shuri, was the Black Panther. It's no secret because they released a poster of a new poster with her as the Black Panther, like 2 or 3 days before the movie was released. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, and we kind of guessed it anyway it only made sense. It would not have made sense for anyone else to be it, to be honest. But overall, I think they, with what they had to do to fill the gap with no Chadwick and moves forward, I think they did a good job, and overall it was a good movie. Just a little long, I would have maybe shortened it up a little bit, I felt like there was some fill in there, some things in the story that maybe could have, I don't know right off the top of my head what exactly it would be, but I just felt like they could have shortened it up some. You know, just felt a little long at times. Because sometimes you watch a 3-hour movie and they don't feel long, but this one felt like, it felt like a long sit in the theater today when I watched it. Yeah. But I enjoyed it. We'll see where they go next. You know, it makes you wonder with the movies that are coming out with Ant-Man and Guardians 3. It's like, when will these characters appear again? Because, you know, obviously you're going to introduce Namor and his people. That's going to be pretty important going forward. So maybe when we get to the Secret Wars films and things, maybe they'll show back up.
Yeah. Yeah. We could see them pop back in at that time.
Yep. But it was cool to see one of Marvel's very first superheroes on the big screen finally. You know, to see a live action Namor and the feet wings were pretty fucking ballsy and cool.
Yeah.
That's some cool shit there. Hey, when, I don't know, was it my screening, but like, were the water scenes really dark in your screen?
It was dark.
Like, it was really hard to see stuff underwater.
I saw it in IMAX. So it was easier to see, but it was still dark. Like, especially when they're descending, you know, into the water, it's, you know, and he's taking Shuri. It's like, you know, it's hard to see everything.
Yeah. Cause like, you know, like when, with like, not to compare universes, but like Aquaman's underwater scenes, you can see things that were going on. And this was like, it was really dark. I struggled to know what was happening at times in some of the underwater scenes. So
I figured it'd be flip flopped, you know. DC is supposed to be the darker film, yeah.
Right. And so it wasn't just me. Good to know.
No.
But Black Panther: Wakanda Forever is in theaters now. It's going to make a ton of money this weekend. And go see it, I guess.
It's going to be the number one movie for a few weekends. I got
probably
feeling.
Until Avatar comes out, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe Disney Strange Worlds, that might do well. I don't know, though. Then again, families aren't exactly flocking back into theaters for animated films, so we'll see.
Yeah. But, we'll see.
All right. Well, let's get into today's featured film. And but in order to get today's featured film, we kind of have to go backwards. We just went back 30 years, look at the legacy of Kevin Conroy. But we're going to go back 30 years to the comic book shops in 1992. And this crossover storyline actually started in the fall of 91, but it ran about a year. It was one of the biggest crossovers at the time to ever occur as Doomsday was coming to planet Earth to attack the Justice League and Superman. And one of the big things, though, is the original comic, it was mostly the European Justice League. Whereas the movie that we're talking about today, they used the more modern, well-known Justice League. But that's okay. As Doomsday is brought to Earth, marches his way across the planet to find Superman. Eventually, in comic book stores in November of 1992, fans flocked to the comic book stores for the special black bagged edition featuring the death of Superman. Yeah. And it's funny because it started out as a joke. Superman sales were declining. You know, in 92, Batman was at the top of the world as far as DC goes because of Batman Returns and other media. And they were like, well, how do we make Superman relevant? And they were like, well, let's have him get married. Like, no, we already have the wedding story planned for down the line. And that was something they had planned in a couple of years. And they were like, so they jokingly said, well, what if we killed him before his wedding? And they kind of laughed it off. They're like, well, that's not a bad idea. So it kind of started as a joke. So they end up writing this massive storyline with Dan Jurgens doing a lot of the writing, and they kill Superman through Doomsday. And fans flocked to the comic stores. I missed out on getting a copy. Ended up having to get like a third or fourth printing eventually because it sold out everywhere. I remember from our high school, we had a comic store around the corner. People were rushing over to the comic store to try to get a copy of this after work. Comic stores were packed. This is pre-internet things, but people were into this. I mean, it got national media coverage from CNN and other national media across the world that Superman was dying. It was an unprecedented comic book event at the time. You know, now comic book crossovers are common. They happen all the time. Comic book media gets a lot of media coverage now. But in 1992, that was a rare thing. It was one of the biggest things ever, the killing Superman. And they didn't tell people, though, they were bringing him back a year and a half later. They made it sound like, you know, he was going to stay dead for quite a while. And then they did the Funeral for a Friend storyline. Then, of course, the Reign of the Superman. Yep. And then they eventually brought him back. But they made it sound to people like he was really dead. And people bought it into the gimmick hook, line, and sinker. So now, flash forward, when DC first started their animated films, they did Superman Doomsday. It was the first film they did, which is a very loose adaptation of the same story where Superman dies and comes back, and it's all told in like an hour and 10 minutes. And it's really fast to rush, and it's not terrible. Don't get me wrong, but
it's not.
It's not as good as the ones we're talking about today. So the DCs continue to do their animated films, and they remarketed them with the New 52, and they kind of had a continuity to them. And so they decided they were going to tell the death of Superman again, only this time do it properly in a two-part film, with part one being the death of Superman and part two being the Reign of the Superman, where the Supermen come and come back to Earth. And those are the movies we're discussing today, the death of Superman and Reign of the Superman. And they're also available on Blu-ray and digital in a one single volume called The Death and Life of Superman, if you want to watch them all in 1 3-hour sitting. So we presented this as a double feature with our podcast marketing this week, because it kind of is.
Yeah.
So basically, to summarize these films, in the first film, Doomsday is sent to Earth, and even Lex Luthor doesn't know what's going on. He's finding his own way to try to hopefully defeat Superman, as he always does. And Doomsday makes his way across the Earth, basically, into Metropolis. And him and Superman duke it out after Doomsday takes out the Justice League and basically takes all of them out. And he ends up killing Superman right in front of Lois Lane. She holds him in his arms, very similar to the storyline in the comics as far as the imagery. And that's really how you summarize the death of Superman. So that's it's a giant fight, but it's a damn good fight. It's a really kick-ass movie.
And they throw some romance in there.
Oh, yeah, and some romance. And we're going to talk about that, all of that more here in a minute. And then that leads in the Reign of the Superman. So, Matt, you summarize the second film of our double feature.
Yeah, so Reign of the Superman, we're introduced with three different Supermen that, you know, they don't know if this is like the real Superman or Superman has returned or, you know, but they definitely know something's going on. There's a newscast that kind of lazily introduces all of them, you know, but, you know, you do have to save some time for the end. Eventually, you know, Lois finds out that the cyborg Superman is Hank Henshaw, and he's being controlled by Darkseid to carry out this mission to enslave the American people by getting them to volunteer as super people, since the Justice League has, you know, conveniently convened in a single area to where a portal falls on top of them and zips them into another part of the universe where they're conveniently trapped.
And we and during all that, we find out that Darkseid was the one who sent Doomsday to Earth.
Yes. Yeah. You find that out. And Lois, through some cool detective work and the help of Steel, Henry Irons, they find out that Henshaw's behind it. Then you also have this Eradicator that's flying around. He's got some cool sunglasses. And there's a cool team up at the end because, you know, Superman finds out he's in a coma and that he's been trying to heal. And he's got the black suit on, some long ass hair, and some 5 o'clock shadow. And he goes up to the tower to stop Hank Henshaw as he has defied Darkseid's order, and he wants to take care of Superman and take him out because he didn't save his wife, and he should have because he's Superman. And there's a cool battle at the end, and Lois opens up the blinds, and Superman absorbs all the light from the sun, and he takes out Hank Henshaw. The Justice League is brought back. And we don't see Darkseid again, other than some, you know, his plan to come to Earth. And you just kind of see teases of him. I don't know why he's even really in the film. I think, you know, Hank Henshaw can kind of handle the villain work all by himself. But, you know, he's there. Also have Superboy, who's built to be annoying, and he's very annoying. It's this cocky ass little boy. But yeah, I mean, that's the film and that film in the nutshell.
Well, I think the dark side thing, part of the problem with the new 52 films is, excuse me, the continuity is very loose. And I think it was all alluding to when he shows up in Apocalypse War.
Okay.
But I think the writing is so loose that it doesn't really flow right. But it was to show that Darkseid had this plan that he was planning on moving onto Earth and attacking eventually, which we get in Apocalypse War.
That makes sense.
But yes, but the crazy thing about these two movies is they're two movies that tell one story, and Death of Superman is the better of the two. It's a fantastic action story with an inner heart to it because of his relationship with Lois, and you feel the emotion of the film as he fights Doomsday. And for an animated film, it's emotional, especially when he dies.
Yeah.
And then you have Reign of Superman, which is good, but not as good. And part of the problem, you even said it with your summary, is like you have to introduce a lot of elements in the first 30 or 40 minutes of the movie. So the last 30 or 40 minutes of the movie are trying to wrap all that up. It's almost too much going on in Reign of Superman. That's the problem with it, as they try to tell a lot of story in an hour and a half, where it wraps up nicely. I think the second half of the film is better than the first half.
First
half of the film is like really rushed and what's going on here, and then it gets better in the second half of the film. But when you watch these movies back to back, though, they flow pretty well. They tell a nice complete story, which I think overall is a pretty good adaptation of the Death of Superman storylines from the 90s. Obviously, they change some things and take some liberties and modernize it, but that's okay because I think it's still nicely done adaptations. I really enjoy the first part of this a lot. The Death of Superman is really well done. Good voice work across the board. Good animation. The action sequences are really fucking well done. I mean, they feel like a live action film. I mean, they're really, really some of the best.
Oh, dude.
Yeah. Some of the best of the DC animated action sequences.
Watching Doomsday just pick apart the Justice League one by one and working his way up from, you know, strong from, you know, weakest Justice League member all the way to Superman is just a sight to see. I mean, it is so good. Just the terror that, you know, he's giving the Justice League. I mean, you think, I almost thought Batman was going to die in the film. You know, when I first watched it, I'm just like, you know, how is he going to get away from this guy? You know, he's a Kryptonian.
He's beating the shit out of all of them. He beats the shit out of Wonder Woman. He tears Cyborg in half. He makes ends meet of Martian Manhunter. I mean, he's just Doomsday is truly frightening and unstoppable. You look at the way he tore through the Atlanteans when he was underwater. I mean, he is a beast to mess with. And
Luthor, man, you mentioned those Atlanteans in the beginning. Luthor is kind of a dick to his own people. They're like, oh, there's people here. He's like, those are Atlanteans, you idiots.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm like, ah, man.
But to Luthor's credit, man, he doesn't just stand by in this and be a bad guy hiding behind the scenes. He steps in his suit and he tries to go head to toe to toe with Doomsday.
He does.
And he's pretty. I gotta give Lex some props to this, man. He goes in there and tries to be a badass himself.
He does, man. He's got that big old cannon and he uses it to kind of level Doomsday for, you know, a few moments, while Superman kind of regains his you know, wind and gets back out there.
Mm-hmm. Kind of a throwback to his old superpower suit he used to wear on Super Friends.
Yeah.
Stuff, a kind of modern version, but he gets out there and he tries his best and he gets hurt in the fight. So Lex makes a sacrifice because he even realizes that this thing is unstoppable and he needs to do what he can after he almost sees him destroy Superman. And a few minutes later, he obviously does, you know. And what I love is when Superman flies super straight across and just turns Doomsday's neck into like five pieces. I'm like, wow, that was a pretty cool animated sequence. And then he, of course, collapses himself and dies in Lois's arms. Little did we know that he was just going to go into a state of comatosis and revitalize himself in his chambers of his Fortress of Solitude. And heal and come back eventually in the second part of the movie. But like you said, they added some romance to this. He he tells Lois right before he fights Doomsday that he is Superman. Or does he tell her?
Yeah.
Yeah. And he tells her he loves her. And that was a change because in the Doomsday comics in the 90s, I think she already knew at this point. So that they just introduced that in this because they hadn't done it in the new 52.
Yeah.
And so it adds an element, it adds an emotional element to the fight as he's revealed his love to the woman that she thought she was only in love with Clark. She'd understand why Clark was the way he was because he was spreading his life between saving people and being Clark Kent.
Yeah.
So he revealed that to her. And, you know, we get all the standard Superman characters in this. Jimmy Olsen makes an appearance and Perry White and everyone else. And so I think the movie for an animated film does a good job of juggling all those characters and then also give you a satisfying battle in it to lead up to the death of Superman.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much. And then just the way he tells Lois, you know, that how he feels about her, because, you know, he's an alien, but he's very much a human whenever it comes to this. Mm-hmm. You know, he's even, you know, consulting with, you know, Flash, you know, how, you know, have you told, you know, because Flash is going to get married to Iris. And he's like, you know, have you told her about, you know, you? And he's like, oh, absolutely. You know, and kind of gives Superman a little advice. And, you know, Superman, you know, he has to leave because he hears about, you know, the Justice League through Jimmy's phone call with Lois in the middle of her realizing, you know, he's Superman and coming to terms with that. And he leaves her a note. And it says, "My last secret." And she opens it up and says, "I love you." And he, you know, is flying away and she's looking at him. And she's, of course, going to jump into the action. She even throws a rock at Doomsday to try and distract him. And he, you know, Doomsday is like slowly walking towards Lois. And Superman's like freaking gassed at this point because he's thrown everything at Doomsday, but in a fit of rage and disparity. He, like you said, he just blasts towards Doomsday the fastest he's done in the entire episode and hits him right there on the chin and spins his neck around like an owl, except that neck ain't double jointed on Doomsday and he fucking breaks his neck backwards.
Yeah. Well, what's cool about this too is, you know, we had a live action Doomsday in the Batman vs. Superman movie. But that Doomsday didn't feel as threatening as this one, you know, because that one just sort of shows up at the end of the city and it's destroyed things and Batman and Superman were going to have to fight him. And the whole death of Superman is kind of handled a little bit haphazardly in that movie. You know, you didn't quite feel the emotional punch that you felt, even in this animated version. You know, it's just, it punches that much better. No pun intended by saying it punches it much better.
Yeah,
it
punches.
But it just does. And it's a... you know, it's one of the – I'd put this in probably one of the top five of the DC animated films going all the way back to the beginning of the things.
Easily.
It's just solidly done. You know, I like this movie a lot. I give it a pretty solid A, man, for the death of Superman. And we'll do an overall ranking of what we think of the saga is. We're done here with Reign of Superman in a minute.
Yeah, no, and just, man, whenever they have a Batman, you know, reporting out on how severe the incident is with Doomsday, he's like, "We've got three leaguers down and we just got here." It's like, man, you guys are fucked.
Yeah. Yeah, there is some subtle humor in it. And, you know, and we talked a lot about Kevin Conroy at the beginning of the show, but, you know, Jason O'Mara does an okay job of Batman, too. I've gotten pretty used to his voice. He's done a lot of films lately. He does a good job too. I actually probably prefer him over Jensen Ackles doing Batman. You know, I know Ackles did it in The Long Halloween.
I know he did. He did
Red Hood. Yeah,
Red Hood.
But I think he's done. I think he's done Batman since.
Up
just to be sure.
He doesn't feel like Batman voice to me.
Yeah, Jensen Ackles did it in the Long Halloween films. I like Jason O'Mara a little bit more. I've kind of gotten used to his voice.
You know, I'd be okay with Bruce Greenwood coming back and doing another one. You know, I liked him.
And I did enjoy Peter Weller as the older gruff Batman in The Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, yeah. That was good. That was a good one.
But So let's move on to the second half of this double feature movie, is The Reign of the Superman, whenever the four Supermen appear. John Henry Irons, Steel, the Eradicator, Hank. The one thing the movie could have done a little bit better was give it a little bit more backstory on Hank Henshaw. They kind of throw it at you really quickly.
Yeah.
Because he's upset about Batman because he did, or Superman, because he didn't save his wife. And so a project goes wrong and turns him into like this cyborg. And it's just kind of like thrown at you. And that's the biggest problem with The Reign of the Superman, is the first 30, 40 minutes of the movie are really rushed. There's a lot going on. The Justice League are involved. They get teleported away. You're like, wait, what just happened? Darkseid sends his parademons down, and they have this big fight. And it's just bam, bam, bam. Superboy's apparent clone of Superman.
Mixed with Lex.
Yeah, mixed with Lex. They have this Eradicator that shows up, and what's he doing? And it's just like it doesn't have a focus as much as it should the first part of this movie. But then it pays itself because it does come together. With Superman returns and he's fighting to save Lois against Hank Henshaw at the end. And then the Justice League is fighting off the Darkseid's controlled humans or whatever it is that he does.
Yeah.
And they're closing the portal. So it does all wrap up nicely. It just starts off a little wonky, unfortunately. And it's a shame because Death of Superman was so good that you had a lot of high hopes for the sequel or for the second half of this film. And that being said, it's still worth watching. I don't think it's bad or anything. It's just
it's just
not as solid.
Yeah, not as solid, not as much action. There's a lot of investigation by Lois and there are some cool scenes, obviously, but just obviously really convenient and lazy writing on just two major parts, one being the newscast and then two, just the league, all of the league being in one spot fighting off the dark side beasts that come through the portal. Parademons that come through the portal. And it just happens to fall. And it's like no one notices it, and they're just like, "Let's go meet in this circle." I'm like, "This is convenient,
right?"
But you know, it is what it is. I still think overall, it's the best adaptation of those comics. I mean, you kind of rush through Funeral for a Friend, and you put it all in the back of the Superman Doomsday, I think in the comics, Reign of Superman opens up in it with a newscast too, though. I could be wrong.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you still get all these Supermen and super people fighting each other. And it's, powerful. Who's going to be the next Superman until the real one shows up and grabs Rebecca Romijn. Or Lois Lane, whatever you want to call her, because I didn't realize Rebecca Romijn voiced Lois until today. Yeah, and I always forget, and I know Wonder Woman. I forget who's voicing Wonder Woman.
Rosario Dawson.
Rosario. Yeah, I was like, I was refreshed on that, it's like, man, you have these big names voicing these people. Even though Wonder Woman's only in it for a little bit, it was cool to see that. But Lois is, she somehow dodges a bunch of heat beams and opens up those shutters. I think she would have gotten friggin' fried. But this isn't Injustice, so we can't have Lois die in the film without the Joker. I was entertained by it. I think it's a fun movie to watch still. You get the cyborg Superman versus the Superman at, friggin' 60% strength, still relying on a black suit to absorb those rays of the sun. And he puts Hank Henshaw in his place by the end of the film. That's a cool little battle scene up at space. I wish we would have gotten more leaguers in the film. You kind of just have to deal with none of them, except for the Parademon fight. And, you know, I guess that's for tactical reasons. They want that to happen so that Superboy is, you know, kind of on his own without any support when dealing with the Hank Henshaw issues that arise in the film. And, you know, because there's this battle for who's going to be the face of Superman, and Lex is really trying to push Superboy to be the face of Superman. But of course, Cyborg Superman had other intentions, and he sets up a really nice, convenient issue to where he's able to protect the president and take control. I don't remember that comic too much. I forget if that happened in the comic, but could be wrong. Did that happen in the comic?
It's hard for me to remember too. I'm more familiar with the Doomsday story than I am the follow-ups.
I wish we would have gotten the Superman, you know, dreaming in his coma and seeing his father. You know, I always thought that was a cool part of the comics.
I think that's my biggest problem with the Reign of Superman adaption is it just like in the Justice League movie where Superman just sort of comes back conveniently. I feel like in the movie, in this animated version, they kind of rushed that a bit. I would have liked to see a little bit more of Superman's journey back to life. But when he does show back up, it is really cool at all. But I just wanted a little bit more of that, you know, than they focused on the Reign of the Superman more than the Return of Superman. So maybe that could have been a little bit better. And then you have this really freaking awesome fight between him and Doomsday in the first one. And then this one, it's not a bad fight against Henshaw, but it just feels kind of a bit low key.
Yeah.
You know, and like you said, they make it look like Darkseid is going to come to the Earth and he's got this plan, and then they're able to conveniently close the portal before Darkseid comes. And it almost feels like, man, well, couldn't Superman have just punched Darkseid at least once in this movie?
For real, you know?
So there's a lot of setup in Reign of Superman that doesn't pay off as well. And I think that's the thing. Even though Superman dies in The Death of Superman, at least the payoff is there. You get what the movie intended to do, and that was The Death of Superman. And Reign of Superman doesn't pay off as well as it should have, I think, for a finale, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that's that's fair. A fair analysis.
Yeah, but it's still a good adaptation. It's the only one we have of this storyline. I'm glad DC of their animated films tried to readapt these and make new versions of it. And we just happened to be doing this week during the 30th anniversary of the Superman comics coming out back in 1992. And sadly, it happened to be the same week that we lost Kevin Conroy, the great voice of Batman. It was just a coincidence that we are doing a movie about Superman dying on the same week that real life voice of Batman died. Obviously, no disrespect at all, but I think it's a fitting tribute to talk Kevin Conroy and to talk The Death of Superman, because it was an important comic book event back in 1992. It really was.
The biggest.
It changed the game. It brought people into comic stores because, you know, comic stores now are very commonplace, you know, thanks to the MCU and all the comic movies we have. But in the 90s, comics were still a niche thing, you know, and the early 90s was a big time for comics because of Batman Returns and things like that, and X-Men the Animated Series and Batman the Animated Series and Spider-Man. All these cartoons were starting to show up, and people were starting to wonder who these characters were. Image Comics was formed, you know, with the big crew. So the early 90s was a big era for comics to grow and get people to the stores. And DC and Marvel were looking for ways to keep up with the independent publishers like Image and things like that. So they had to do things like killing off Superman or releasing an X-Men #1 or Spider-Man #1 with McFarlane art and Jim Lee art to get these people into comic stores. And The Death of Superman was one of the biggest things of all of that. And to this day, 30 years later, it's still one of the most remarkable, biggest comic book events to ever happen worldwide to get people in comic stores. And I know in stores this week, there's 30th anniversary editions out of The Death of Superman as people are commemorating this. It's a red foil bag edition you can get this year for the 30th anniversary with a bunch of special artwork and stuff in it. These movies, if you have HBO Max, you can watch both of these on HBO Max. They're fun to watch along with a lot of the other DC animated films. Mm-hmm. And, I gave Death of Superman an A. I probably give Reign of Superman probably a B. It's not quite as good. So I think overall, I think as a double feature, I still think the double feature is good enough to give it a pretty solid A minus overall, the two films.
I have to agree with you on that one. A for Death of Superman easily. B for Reign and A minus combined.
Yeah. I mean, just good animated films and an important comic book event, to this day, that's it changed the way comic book events were done. I really think it did. And it still is a blueprint for telling a great crossover stories to this day, you know. And it was cool. I met Absolutely. Dan Jurgens. I met Dan Jurgens at a Comicpalooza a couple of years, and I had some of the – I didn't have the Death Superman, but I did have some of the Doomsday issues from the store, and I got him to sign some of them.
Nice.
So that was pretty cool. But the Death Superman, Reign of Superman, it was a cool thing to talk about today, and then watch one HBO Max if you haven't seen them. If you were into DC, so, you know, some people avoid the animated stuff. Like, oh, I'm not watching that as cartoons. But they think it's silly. It's okay to watch them as an adult and enjoy these. These are pretty adult stories.
Yeah.
PG-13, DC animation definitely has a little bit of edge to it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's do some news. Let's do some news. Next week we will have this month in pop culture history. And I know we advertised it for this week, but with the Kevin Conroy news and everything, we decided to discuss that next week of the show. So let's do some news. We got a couple of new trailers this week. One that I saw on the big screen today, and I already watched a video. We got our first official trailer for John Wick Chapter 4. I know we had the Comic-Con trailer, but this is the first trailer that I guess the general public has seen. And yes, please. I can't wait till March to see this. I mean, it looks freaking badass.
Looks good.
And Donnie Yen is in a fucking John Wick movie. I mean, how cool is that, dude? You know, it's just like...
Dude, that's... Yeah. I can only imagine how the fight scenes are going to be.
I'm really curious about it seems like such a simple line in the trailer, but when Winston says, well, when John tells him, well, I don't sit at the table. No, but your family does. Wait, what? A whole other element added to the John Wick franchise. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Family? That's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out in context. You know, once we see the film, just looks like another winner, man, for sure. You know, I need to rewatch 3 before I see it. You know, it's probably out of the John Wick.
Yeah,
movies.
That way.
I know. I saw it with you, but I'm not as familiar with it. I've seen 1 and 2 several times. I think I've only seen 3 a couple of times. I think I need to rewatch it before seeing part 4.
Get yourself refamiliarized with it.
Yeah, and maybe when March rolls around, maybe we'll have to. We did John Wick 1 already. Maybe we'll have to. It's time to do John Wick 2.
Get another. Oh, definitely. Never a bad idea to do a John Wick film.
No, and then we also got a trailer this week for Knives Out, Glass Onion, as it's called, a Knives Out sequel. Another movie. You know, Knives Out was a pleasant surprise a couple of years ago. And I realized how much I kind of enjoy whodunit films every now and then. You know, like I really kind of like the Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile films. And and I kind of like this kind of genre every now and then. I just don't want to watch it too much. And I really enjoy Knives Out 1 and the second one looks like it's going to be a lot of fun, too.
Yeah, Batista says Craig likes this role better than James Bond.
Oh, yeah. Craig hated James Bond.
Yeah.
We all know that. Yeah. I think he gets to have a little more fun with this movie, with the accent and everything else. So I think that's mm-hmm. why he's enjoying it quite a bit. So it should be fun. Colin Farrell has kind of let it slip a little bit when The Penguin takes place, which is his television series he's doing on HBO Max. To some surprise, it looks like it's kind of a sequel to the Batman in a way. Like it's going to take place after the Batman, from what Colin Farrell said. A lot of people were wondering if it was going to take place before and how he got involved with Falcone and everything, but apparently it's going to take place after him. You know, Matt Reeves is helping produce this and he's hands on it, so I think it'll be cool. I mean, you can always give me more stuff in the Batman world. I'm down for this Penguin
series. I guess it's going to show how Penguin takes over.
Yeah. A couple of Lucasfilm notes. there is rumor that this is not, you know, to this point, it's not a surprise anymore that Disney Plus is developing every goddamn property they have for a TV show. But there's rumors that they're developing the Indiana Jones television series. And word is, it's not quite young Indiana Jones, but it could be like young 20s Indiana Jones. Some rumors are that it takes place shortly before Raiders of the Lost Ark. So Indy's is a little older, but not Sean Patrick Flannery young. But it's interesting because Harrison Ford said not over his dead body that anyone else would play Indy. But perhaps he's given the permission to not recast Indy as far as films, maybe a TV show. Strangely, as an Indiana Jones fan, I'm kind of okay with this. I think Indiana Jones could work as a television show and get to see some stories of where he came from.
You know, come up with many different artifacts that, you know, he can, you know, go on the hunt for. Many tribes that he can run from and many snakes to be afraid of for him.
It's one of my favorite characters ever created. So I anytime I get more Indiana Jones, I'm okay with that. I don't, you know, if they want to do it and they do it well, let's bring it on. Nice. And lastly, it dropped on Disney Plus today. There's a little short developed by Studio Ghibli and Lucasfilm featuring Grogu. Mm-hmm. I watched it. That's why I didn't say it down with this. I was saying for the news. It's cute. There's no dialogue. It's just a hand-drawn, old-fashioned little animated short featuring Grogu done by Studio Ghibli. The coolest thing about it is, I would love to see Studio Ghibli do a full animated Star Wars film. I think that would be absolutely incredible.
I think it would look great. Yeah, it would look great if they did it.
They're one of the greatest animation studios we've ever had, so I would be okay with that. So check that out on Disney Plus if you want. That was it on the news, man. Not too much this week, just some trailers and things like that. Let's preview next week's film. This is a we don't – every now and then we get fan requests for movies, and this was a friend of Matt's that suggested we do this movie, and we kind of originally might have been part of Halloween Horrors, but because I had to take a week off to move, we backed it up into this month. And And that is M. Night Shyamalan's was this his second film? I think it was.
I think so. It was either this or The Village.
Yeah, I can't remember. But it is. We are going to discuss Signs.
What can make geometric shapes the size of a football field?
What kind of machine can bend a stalk of corn over without breaking it?
Can't be by hand, it's too perfect.
So the aliens can't read our minds?
Oh.
Some animals around the county have been acting funny. Some of them violent. It's almost like they act when they smell a predator around.
Amman, Nairobi, Bangalore, and Jerusalem as the
same shows on every station.
Every station?
It is the 18th reported crop sign in that country in the last 72 hours.
I'm a little scared. All this stuff on TV. Joe Gills was in here talking about the end of the world.
They're staying in the shadows. It's called probing, to make sure things are all clear.
Clear for what?
For the rest of them.
There's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water?
Ground forces are being assembled.
It's happening. Don't be afraid. Like War of the Worlds.
Believe it's going to pass.
Don't be afraid.
They're in the house.
Here it comes. Don't be afraid.
starring Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix. Man, this movie, out of all the Shyamalan films, this is probably my favorite of his. I really like this movie. It's genuinely, I find it genuinely frightening in times because the movie draws you in with the sense that you're watching these events occur with the people on screen. And I will never forget when I saw this in theaters and Joaquin is watching the newscast and the alien walks across the screen. I literally sent like my spine tingling when that happened. The theater. I was like, it was so freaky. And, so it's definitely quite the movie to watch. So we're going to discuss Size next week by request from one of Matt's buddies on the show.
So I have to remind him. Remind him to tune in.
And but you know, other than that, rest in power, Kevin Conroy. Man, you will be missed. But what a legacy you left us with your work. And the same, I know it's been a couple years since, but Chadwick Boseman, your legacy lives on with a wonderful Black Panther sequel that came out this week. And I think he'd be very proud of what they did on screen, and pay tribute to him. And other than that, I saw too. I don't want to dismiss him, but Gallagher, the comedian that used to smash watermelons and stuff like that, passed away in 1976. He's more of a bit older generation remembers him, but he was quite famous. People would go to his shows, and if you were sitting in the first 10 rows, you had to bring raincoats and things to cover yourself so you didn't get watermelon juice all over you. That was kind of his gag. Some talent lost this week, but they will be remembered for the things they have left us. But the Rebel Radio Podcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs, all your social media and all that. Of course, we're on all the apps. If you really love us, stop by iTunes when you're listening to podcasts and drop us a little 5-star review. We would love that.
Give us a rating.
We'd appreciate it very much. And but as always, thank you for listening. We do appreciate it very much. Continue to stay safe out there. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Until next time, remember, as always, just go there
and do it.